next case on the calendar today is in the matter of the welfare of the children of AB and MJB. This case is A19-0785. Council can come forward when you're ready. And I'll just remind you to please use initials or refer to the parties as father or mother or child, because we are recording here today and we want to make sure that those names remain confidential. The parties will each have 15 minutes for argument. Appellant will have an additional 5 minutes for rebuttal, and I'd appreciate it if you could introduce yourself at the beginning of your argument. Thank you.
May it please the court. My name is Michelle Olson, and I'm representing the appellant in this matter. This case is regarding whether there was sufficient findings of fact to adjudicate the parties, which would be appellant and respondent mother and the children in what we call a CHIPS, or child in need of protection or services. There are three reasons why there haven't been sufficient facts. First, there hasn't been a sufficient particularized findings. The findings themselves were very general and were not sufficient enough to actually meet the statutory requirements. The second reason is that what was being applied to these facts is, again, lumped for all of the children. Not each individualized child was discussed. It was basically the children were considered one unit, even though the facts don't support a CHIPS for all five children. And lastly, there aren't really findings in a sense that they're not true findings. These findings were not shown regarding best interests, and they were not shown regarding the actual finding that the court has made a determination on. It was more based on opinions of experts and their testimony and not on actual selections and determinations by the court. Now, regarding the first issue, which would be the sufficient particularized findings, to prove in a CHIPS adjudication trial, you must prove that one enumerated child protection ground exists and that the subject is in need of protection or services, the subject child in this reference. That is citing in RESSW 767 Northwest 2nd. In this case, in this particular instance, there wasn't sufficient findings. There wasn't particularized findings. Throughout the entire document, it is an extremely generalized statements that were being made by the court. Now, the cases and what the grounds were cited were for three.
Ms. Olson, can I interrupt you? Before you go further, could you explain the difference between your first argument and your third argument?
Yes, Your Honor. The first argument is that the findings themselves are not specific enough. It's different than just having generalized findings that are based on opinions. They are two different things. If it's based on opinions, the court can't just say, this officer testified, and that's it. And the officer testified, and a CHIPS has been cited, and a CHIPS then is in place. That is not allowed. The case law is very clear that they don't do that, because the point is for the judge to make a determination, not just to go straight through testimony. Now, the judge can make credibility determinations, but they can't just say, the officer opined this, CHIPS.
So this is your argument based on Spicer?
Yes, Your Honor. And then regarding the first argument, it's different because there isn't particular.
First or the third now, I'm sorry.
The third argument is based on Spicer. The first argument is based on the fact that each child needs to be determined to have a CHIPS. They are not a unit. They can't be lumped together, and those findings do not specify that. It basically lays some groundwork for the history of what had happened, but not why each child would need this protection or services,
And so for that argument, are we looking at subdivision 6 of the definitions?
Yes, Your Honor. That's where we're looking at subdivision 6 as well as the SSW case, because you need both grounds for it, and to show that the parents are not able or the subject child needs the protection or services. You actually have to have those two separate parts. So first you look at whether grounds have been met, and in this case we believe that grounds have not been met, and the reason why is that pornographic work is very specific in what it's being cited, and that is the statute that they're going under, which is Minnesota Statute 617.246 subdivision 2, and I believe it's parent F parent 2 and parent 1 or I Roman numeral 2 and then Roman numeral 3. Basically, that is creating the definition of pornographic work. In this case, there is no evidence that was shown to expressly describe why the work was pornographic in nature.
So your argument is that there was no violation of Section 617.246?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
And the reason for that, again, is because there was no showing, there was no evidence really describing why it was pornographic in nature. Yes, there were photos of naked children on there, but that doesn't make it pornographic. Lots of people have children photos, embarrassing photos of when you're a child, of you in a bath or you doing certain things. That doesn't mean that you are harboring any pornographic work in and of itself. That's why we have such a specific definition, because we don't want people getting charged for crimes that they didn't commit.
District Court made certain findings about you know, which body parts were depicted and the position, or the, there was one about a child lying on her back with her legs spread and so on.
Yes, Your Honor. There were seven, I believe there were six or seven photos in total that the BCA felt and that the Springfield Police Department felt may be pornographic, but in describing them and looking at them, there was no actual full depiction of why that was considered pornographic in nature based on the statutory requirements and grounds. There should be findings on that.
Well, the district court described them. It seems to me the district court had a relatively fulsome description of those photographs. I can understand you might disagree with the finding, but what was lacking, or what additional information needed to be conveyed by the findings?
What was lacking was how the description makes them pornographic. You can have a very vivid description. It was very vivid, but that does not mean that they are pornographic. What should have been considered in the findings is, based on the statute, this is how it makes it pornographic. This is the nature of it. There's no description of why the nature of the photos were pornographic.
Well, and in paragraph 33, the judge describes the poses as sexually explicit poses and then describes them. And how does that not fit within the definition of pornographic work, which includes lewd exhibition of genitals?
Your Honor, it's because it doesn't describe what made them so sexually explicit. I mean, again, we're making a generalized term, they're sexually explicit. What has deemed them to be that? Is that based on the fact that the officer thought they were sexually explicit? Is it based on the fact that in observing them, they seem to meet the criteria of the statute? You don't know. You can't tell, because all it is just a blanket statement that that's what they are. And that's what continues to happen throughout the findings, which is the concern for the appellant in this matter. You can't just make statements like that, just blanket statements, and consider them to be a CHIPS. The point of a CHIPS is to protect or provide services. It's not to take the child away from their parent, but that seems to be what was the concern here, was that there was some behavior that the court and that respondent department thought may be concerning, but that doesn't mean a CHIPS should happen. So that is where the concern is.
If we were to agree with you on the findings, would we reverse and remand for more detailed findings?
Your Honor, we would ask for a reversal and remand for more detailed findings, but we would ask that there be no adjudication to be considered, because, that's why there's two separate arguments here. First, that the findings aren't sufficient enough to support an adjudication, but if the court were to find it may support adjudication, it doesn't give us enough robust findings to make that description. So either the court needs to remand it down for better findings, or the court can determine that just based on looking at the evidence that has been presented and these findings that it's not sufficient. It's kind of a two-part issue, Your Honor, because the first part is that there isn't sufficient findings, but as well, the findings themselves are just mimicking the officer statements, the guardian ad litem statements, and the social worker statements, which is where we go to argument three, which would be my kind of my next argument.
Is this a, I just want to, with respect to the question whether the children meet the definition of CHIPS, is this the only reason, or are there other reasons as well?
The other reasons why the children don't meet the definition of CHIPS is because they're not showing that each individual child needs these services. Again, even if a grounds can be found, you have to have this two-pronged test. And there isn't actually, there. I believe there is one sentence in the entire order that says that it's in the best interest that the child not be around their father. But that doesn't actually determine that there's grounds that services or protection really need to be provided. It doesn't explain it. It's very.
So you're saying that's a separate fact that needs to be found?
Yes,
that
Your Honor.
Need. So, but doesn't, is there case law that says so?
Yes, that is in regards to SSW, Your Honor. It specifically says that. It specifically has that. In fact, the quote is that the petition alleged the following grounds in support of finding that the child was in protection or services. They go through those grounds, and they actually say that those grounds are met. The concern, however, is that the district court concluded, because what happened was basically a court of appeals affirmed the district court, because the district court had concluded there was no showing that the subject child of that petition was actually in need of services. While there was a history of it, which is what these allegations are, the incident is in 2014 and 2017, there's actually no showing that father or mother could not have provided services or provided their own care. There was no showing that either party was unwilling to have services. The parties were supportive of services that they were getting. And in fact,
but the court found that relied on the definition of a child in need of protection or services as one who resides with or has resided with a victim of domestic child abuse or resides with or would reside with a perpetrator of domestic child abuse. So assuming that is met, that, you know, these children all reside in the same house, so what more detailed findings are needed if that criteria or, you know, if that statutory language is met?
That specific statutory ground was found in SSW. They found that that the mother in that case was a perpetrator of prior sexual abuse against her former children.
Isn't that case somewhat factually distinguishable from this case in that here the father is residing or was residing in the home with the children, you know, at the time, and I thought in SSW the abuse happened, you know, prior to that child being born.
Your Honor, that's a distinction in that it was prior to the child being born. However, the statute doesn't make that distinction.
I'm just looking at the statute and the actual wording. And the conclusions of law, it says a child in need of protection or services is one who resides with or has resided with a victim of domestic child abuse or resides with or would reside with a perpetrator of domestic child abuse as defined. And isn't the issue is whether this is a perpetrator of domestic child abuse? And if there's 90 pictures of children on the computer, and six of those pictures include his own child, wouldn't this be sufficient evidence for the court to make this conclusion?
To make a conclusion
Isn't that what we're required to do?
To make a conclusion that there may be a ground, yes, but that doesn't.
I guess I'm not understanding your argument. How was this not supported by the findings that the judge made?
The ground may have been supported, but the secondary factor is not. Just because a ground has been found, there is that secondary test that requires you to find that the children themselves are in need of protection or services. While there was, in SSW, while the incident was a while ago, the child still resided with someone who was a perpetrator of domestic abuse. That is the incident. The incident are, none of these pictures were taken before 2014, these alleged photographs. They were all 2014. That's the oldest the photos were. And then the other incident was 2017. This petition didn't happen until after, way after that, a whole year after that. So, again, this is showing that maybe a ground has been met. But if a ground has been met, that doesn't mean that the children weren't getting services or that they weren't being able to keep the services they had because of father. That is the secondary determination. Or mother. You have to determine.
But father had the picture on his computer, you know, more recently. So while the photos of his child, the six photos at issue, those were still on his computer, correct?
Your Honor, I see I'm out of time. May I answer your question?
You may.
Thank you. The photos were on the computer, but there actually wasn't a determination of when the photos had been put on the computer. The BCA couldn't figure it out and actually testified. They had no idea who put them on the computer or how they got on the physical computer or when. There was no determination, which makes the finding even more lacking.
Okay, thank you. Feel free to adjust the podium.
Good morning, Your Honors, opposing counsel. May it please the court, I am Jill Jensen, Assistant Brown County Attorney, here on behalf of the respondent, Brown County Human Services. I will note that a social worker for Brown County Human Services, as well as the guardian ad litem in this case, are present in the courtroom today. Your Honors, this case is solely about whether the findings of fact are sustained by the evidence and whether the conclusions of law are sustained by the court's findings of fact. In this case, both the findings of fact are sustained by evidence and the conclusions of law are sustained by the findings of fact. And for that reason, we would ask that you affirm the district court's order adjudicating the children in need of protection or services. A couple quick things I just wanted to note before I jumped into my main argument. I would note a couple corrections to my memorandum. The first one is that I listed the mother's birth date as April 11th. Her birthday is actually March 10th. That doesn't really have any effect on the analysis, but I wanted to bring it to the court's attention. The second fact is that in my memorandum, I talk about several scenarios of what happened to the pictures that child two said he took of another child. And upon my review of the evidence, I would note that child two stated that he actually deleted those photos right away. So the effect of that would just be making my arguments about the several different scenarios inapplicable.
Well, could we get right to what I think is the strongest argument that the appellant makes here is that there's nothing in these findings vis-a-vis these other children other than child one that indicate that they're in any way harmed or affected by any behavior of the father.
And
therefore, there should not, at a very minimum, be a CHIPS determination as to these other children, and not even to child one. But I think, and if I misstated the essence of your argument, please let me know in rebuttal, but can we get right to that argument?
Yes, Your Honor. Appellant is correct. There does need to be a finding of a statutory ground and that the children are in need of protection or services are actually currently in need of protection or services. SSW makes clear that that just means that the district court has to find that the children are at risk. In this case, I would argue that the district court inherently found the children are at risk because of its findings that the children would be unsafe if the disposition was not ordered. The disposition in this case was adjudication of the children in need of protection or services. Similarly, the district court also...
Could you point to which part of the district court's decision you are referring to there?
Yes, Your Honor. If you go to... page 10, findings 46 and 47, the court finds it is in the best interest of the children that father have no contact with them pending further order of the court, and there is no alternative other than the disposition set forth below that will keep the children safe. The inherent nature of that, those two findings, means that the court found these children are at risk and satisfies that the children are in need of protection or services.
And what findings support paragraphs 46 and 47? I mean, those are pretty conclusory statements.
Well, those are actually findings, and so we would look to whether the evidence supports those findings. And when you look at the record, you see that the guardian ad litem, the Brown County Human Services social worker, and the children's mother all testified that they had concerns about the children's safety. Because
doesn't the judge need to make findings relating to best interests, so, and safety, and so don't we need to look at to other findings in the order itself as well? I mean, are you suggesting we can just rely on evidence in the record and the judge doesn't need to make any more detailed findings than that relating to best interests and safety?
Well, while it would be more helpful if the court had made more explicit and particularized findings in this case, I think the issue is whether the evidence sustains the findings and the findings sustain the conclusions. I think, so when we're looking at that argument, there are four statutory grounds that the district court found did exist in this case. And the court only needs to find one of those statutory grounds exists and that the children need protection or services as a result.
Can I ask you, because, and maybe I just want to go to the conclusions of law that the judge entered into. I mean, In looking at how this is worded, did the legislature make this decision that if children are residing with someone who's a perpetrator, that that's sufficient? Do we need to go any further, I guess, than the statute, is my question.
And I believe SSW does address that, and it does say that that is not sufficient in and of itself. It refused to adopt that bright line rule.
Okay. Then how would you distinguish then SSW from this case?
Well, if you're looking at SSW, that was a case in which the court didn't even reach adjudication and did not find that children needed protection or services. What happened in that case is they had proven the statutory ground, but the district court had found that the kids did not need protection or services as a result. This case is highly factually distinguishable because the district court in this case found that not only had the statutory grounds been proven, but that the children were in need of protection or services. And I would note that that is actually in the order section of the court's order. It says that the children are in need of protection or services. But they also inherently found that the children need protection or services as a result. There is an order for protection on behalf of the mother and the children against the father in this case.
But what facts can you point us to that indicate that all of these children are in need of protection or services?
Well, this really goes down to the father's conduct, and what the district court found is that he is a predator on vulnerable female, on underage females. And that is demonstrated by his pursuit of the mother when she was 16 and had disabilities, and he was 36. It is also demonstrated by his pursuit of child one's best friend, who is 10 years old and has a traumatic past, for adoption and also marriage. And what is significant about the fact that he wants to adopt and then marry her is that it demonstrates that he does not see any sort of delineation between a child who is his daughter and one that he would later marry and have sexual relations with. So it makes it more likely that he took these pictures of child one, these pornographic photos. And
with respect to the photograph, so the appellant makes the argument that they don't satisfy that criteria of 617-246. So how does this court evaluate that argument?
Well, the issue is whether the court's conclusion is supported by the findings, and it is legally supported as well that these are pornographic images. In my closing argument to the court, I went through all the little jumps that you have to do to find that these photos are pornographic images, and obviously the court considered that when writing its order. And it's not just paragraph 33 in which he finds the photos are sexually explicit. If you look to paragraph 39 of the district court's order, the court finds that the photos include one of child one naked on the ground with her feet and hands above her head showing her anus and vagina. There is a close-up of a vagina and an anus and a photograph of child one's torso, including her breast and vaginal area. This is the exact same lewd exhibition of genitals that is described in State v. Zavarol, which is an unpublished case. And we know that lewd exhibition of the genitals constitutes a pornographic work, which constitutes sexual abuse or domestic child abuse, depending on which statutory ground. So the court's conclusion that the children would reside with a perpetrator of domestic child abuse if he did not order no contact is correct.
Am I correct in assuming that the photographs were exhibits at the hearing?
Yes, and they are Exhibit 31.
And the district court looked at them and to consider their nature?
Yes, Your Honor, the court did. So we know then that there's sufficient findings of facts supported by evidence to support the district court's conclusions of laws on those three statutory grounds. The other statutory ground, which is that the children are in need of protection or services because they're in an injurious or dangerous environment, and that is also supported by the findings and the evidence. The court made several findings about Appellant's conduct with AG, who is child one's best friend, including his apparent plan to adopt and marry her. And what I would know for this court is that there is evidence in the record that AG, by Appellant's own admission, went on them with two family vacations. She stayed overnight at the house on many occasions. And on one of those occasions, he snuck into child one's room to wake up AG. So there's no doubt that the children are exposed to this criminal and predatory environment in the home. In addition, the three youngest children all have significant disabilities. If you look at the transcript from the guardian ad litem's testimony, you can see that we've just reached, quote, the tip of the iceberg in term of services for this family. So there is evidence in the record that the children do need protection or services.
Does your position and does the district court's order depend at all on the definition of child abuse in subdivision 5? Child abuse is a term mentioned in subdivision 6, which defines a child in need of protection or services. I mean, I'm not sure if you've got the statute memorized or not. You probably do. But I bet that subdivision 6 says it defines child in need of protection or services as one who is a victim of child abuse as defined in subdivision 5 or domestic child abuse as defined in subdivision 13. And I think we've been talking about subdivision 13, the domestic child abuse. Is that sufficient, or do we need to also consider the definition of child abuse in subdivision 5?
Well, if I recall the statute correctly, it's or, so I believe it's either or, and domestic child abuse, the appellant is charged with under 217, the statute that satisfies the definition of domestic child abuse.
So I think you're not relying on subdivision 5?
No.
I didn't hear that. What was the question?
I believe she's not relying on subdivision 5, the definition of child abuse.
I am relying on the sexual abuse definition, though, with respect
domestic to child abuse in subdivision 13 is the one that references 617-246. I think you're relying on that.
Yes.
So I just want to make sure, because I know you're arguing the facts, and we're well aware of the facts here.
My apologies.
But I think I want to get back to the legal argument. What is it necessary for the government here to show that each individual child has been injured before there can be a determination of that services are needed?
No, I'm not aware of any legal authority or, in my experience clerking in juvenile court, any court's order that go each through each child and say what exactly they've been harmed by or what exact services they need. There is no legal authority that the court cannot simply say the children are at risk, they are in need of protection or services because father is a predator of vulnerable children.
I'm not sure I understand your answer. I understood the answer to be, I mean, I think the point is we're talking a lot about child one. What is the legal justification for finding children two, three, four, and five to be in need of protection or services?
Well, it's the vulnerability of children two, three, four, and five.
But isn't it also, I mean, the definition of child in need of protection or services, the third part, little III, says resides with or would reside with a perpetrator of domestic child abuse as defined in subdivision 13. I understood that to be the legal basis for the other four children.
Yes, I mean, that is correct. I was just addressing whether they actually are at risk for injury.
Well, and I guess that gets back to the question I asked a while ago. Is it enough if they, under the law, is it enough that if you prove there's child abuse of even one of the children, one of five children, is that sufficient in and of itself for all of the children in that family and that residence being brought in?
That is one of the factors, but there needs to be a showing that the children are at risk as well. That's what SSW says.
All right, so I guess to follow up on that, what is there in this record that indicates these children are at risk? What finding can you point us to that would indicate
in the court's order or in the test?
Any evidence in this record or in the findings that indicate these children are at risk because of the fact they're residing with a perpetrator of child abuse?
And I notice my time is up. May I answer? There is evidence in the record and in the court's findings. The evidence in the record, there is a multitude of evidence showing that the children are under a lot of stress, that they are in need of therapy, that they all have significant disabilities that require services. And mother's own testimony is that the children do require a child in need of protection or adjudication that the children are in need of protection or services to keep them safe from the father. The other thing is that the district court did find in its order that it is in the best interest of the children not to have contact, and if he did not adjudicate them in need of protection or services, they would not be safe. That in itself inherently finds that they're at risk. And this court has recognized implicit findings of that nature, for example, in the matter of the welfare of child of AE, and that's 2017 Westlaw 3379090, and that's a Minnesota Court of Appeals case from 2017 in which the appellant asserted that the children did not need protection or services because the abuser was dead, and the court said no, they need protection or services, and concluded that they needed protection or services under subdivision 6.3. And this court found that the district court implicitly found that appellant's failure to protect was not merely a failure to protect from the abuser, but rather a general failure. So with that, I would just ask that your honors affirm the district court order. Thank you.
Thank you.
Your Honors, I would like to go directly to the point that was made. Regarding the issue at hand, it's exactly what Your Honor's brought up. It's not just one child. Each child needs to be determined for needs or services. I can say I've been doing CHIPS, and I have had CHIPS that specifically say for multiple children with actually multiple parents involved that this child is in need of protection or services, and it describes in the findings why that child is in need of services, as well as what ground it has met. In this case, it lumps all the children as one thing. The fact of the matter is all children are not the same in this instance. Child one is the only one that has been involved in anything that has been brought up to the court and that has been listed in the findings. And the fact is the findings mainly discuss incidents that, again, do not actually describe if the child has been harmed in any way. The majority of the findings are discussing this incident with a non-related minor child and the fact that one of the children gave a note that the child was not aware of what was in the note, the child had no idea what the note was about, and it was given to this non-related child.
But you're ignoring the photograph of child one who was naked, right?
I am not ignoring it, Your Honor. I'm describing that the majority of
comments,
the,
but at least
I apologize.
There's also a finding that child one is stressed and scared. So, you know, it's not just a photograph from, you know, 2014? I'm trying to remember. Yes, when the picture was taken. But there's testimony that child one is currently stressed and scared, or a finding. The judge found that Ms. Nelson testified credibly that child one is stressed and scared. And so isn't there evidence that in the record to demonstrate that child one is in need of protection? And given that the children are living in the same home with the father, if we find that that supports it for child one, why wouldn't it also support it for the other children? Because they could they're living in the same home. There's a risk that the other children could be abused in the same manner, assuming you agree with the court's findings.
Your Honor, I respectfully disagree, one, regarding the findings. It's specifically in testifying, it's on transcript, page 19, line 2 through 9, they discuss it. It actually discusses the fact that the child one is stressed and scared, but it also says she's having a hard time. She gets through the school day. She loves school, so she does well in school, and she tries to avoid other kids. So it actually mischaracterizes where the stress and being scared of. Is it from father or is it from the other kids because of the situation that has been going on or the bullying that this child has already received? Because in that record, it was already stated that child one had been bullied in school earlier. So there actually isn't a determination from that fact of where this stress comes from as well. Getting to your point on the conclusion, there again, though, is no showing that any of the other children have this same stress or scared.
Well, let me ask you this, because there's, as I understand it, the mother had no objection and agreed with the state that these children needed protection or services. Am I correct?
That is correct, Your Honor.
And am I also correct that the mother apparently was afraid enough of this man, the father, that she went and got her own order for protection on behalf of these children? Isn't that one of the findings,
Your Honor? There was an order for protection that was filed. However, due to the procedural nature of this issue, I would question what came first on this order for protection or this CHIPS that was coming. This happens quite frequently in CHIPS cases. So,
but there was an order of protection issued on behalf of these children.
No disagreement that there is an order for protection on these children.
And to the extent that child one was involved in helping groom her friend for possible sexual interaction, I mean, wouldn't that be, isn't the reasonable inference is that her own participation in these events would cause her some stress and be troubling?
Your Honor, my time is up. May I finish? I think that's a very difficult question in that it is kind of a two-part analysis. First, there is an assumption that's being made by the court that there was grooming going on in this instance for this non-related child.
There is evidence in the record from the police officer that this is typical grooming behavior by sexual predators.
Your Honor, that is actually an opinion. I don't believe it is evidence, and that goes to the third point, that it was an opinion made by an officer, and that opinion now is deemed evidence. That isn't true. Opinions are not necessarily evidence. There is no showing that the child had been groomed in any way. The fact that a note was given to the child and the notes was given to a child to say that he wanted to meet her somewhere doesn't mean anything. In fact, appellant testified to what that was regard to because his child, child one, was being bullied and he wanted to get to the cause of it, which was seemed to be related to this
non-related child. Didn't the note ask to meet the child in the middle of the night?
Yes, it's not inappropriate. It isn't a good idea. I would say to automatically assume something is wrong is the concern here. That is what's been going on in this entire case. The fact that he made a questionable choice to say, meet me at midnight, means that he is a perpetrator of domestic child abuse or that he's grooming a child is an extremely big leap to make. And that just is the entire case. That is all it is. The fact that he's made a statement that he may want to marry this child in the future, if she wants to be married, that is actually what it was. It's not just he was going to do this. The fact that he then said, yes, I wanted to adopt her because I feel bad for her, and now that's linked together in that he's grooming a child. The fact that he met his wife when she was 16 years old and he was 36 years old, that doesn't mean he is grooming or he is going after vulnerable people. She was not vulnerable enough to not be able to make her own decision.
You're running over your time quite a bit here, so if you could briefly conclude, I'd appreciate it.
Thank you, Your Honor. In conclusion, the findings are just not sufficient here. They're not particularized towards the grounds. They're not showing an actual need for all the children, just one child, and lumps them together. And the findings themselves are opinions and testimony and not actual determinations by the district court. And therefore, this should be reversed and remanded at a minimum for better findings, or because there is insufficiency, to not adjudicate a CHIPS in this matter. This is to protect children, but we have to remember it's to safeguard children, but not at the detriment also of the parent's right to have a parent-child relationship. And that is what's being ignored here with the district court's order. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your arguments. We will issue our opinion within the statutory time frame.